This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Final hour of Bob, Groz, and Tom. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. We'll eavesdrop coming up at the bottom of the hour, but right now we get a chance to talk some baseball with one of my favorite people in all of Seattle media. There are just some people you can just sit down and talk to for a really long time about nothing other than sports.
You can enjoy the Mariner game. You can actually enjoy the Mariner game.
We enjoy the Mariner game by not paying attention to it and talking about life stuff. That's what we do.
It's so true. I've had a great conversation with Angie about Japan.
Yeah.
Of all things.
She's a wealth of knowledge, which is why we have her now. She's on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. You see her on Root Sports. She is Angie Mentink. Angie, how are you?
I'm good. I don't know that we've ever even talked about sports.
If we have, it's been very brief when we just get into life discussions. And by the way, Angie's somebody that doesn't mind my 8,000 questions. I just pepper her with questions, and she'll just go along with it and answer them.
Actually, I'm impressed because I always think of myself as like, oh, like I'm an interviewer. And then like Bob gets around and I'm like, I'm being interviewed, aren't I?
Oh, yeah.
You're good at this. You should do this for a living.
The Stelton treatment.
I appreciate your patience with that, Angie. hey, but before we get started, I was handed this note. I saw this sent out by Rebecca Hale that Root Sports anchor Angie Mentink named recipient of the 2019 Moose Clausen Community Service Award. How about that? Tell our listeners what that's all about.
Oh, my gosh. Face is hot. I'm red. No, it's awesome. The RBI Club broke the news to me a little bit ago that that I was going to be receiving this honor. It's just it's huge. I'm honored, actually.
Congratulations.
Start off just by embarrassing me, guys.
No, quit trying to be humble.
It's not the way you make people feel at ease.
Yeah, it says, well, I'll just give you the quote from the RBI Club Commissioner, who said, through her days as a standout for the Huskies softball team to her trailblazing career as a professional baseball player, Angie has set an example of what hard work can accomplish. Her smooth transition into the broadcast booth has helped pave the way for other talented women to follow. And as a breast cancer survivor, Angie is an inspiration to us all. Wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you guys very much.
Great to be affiliated.
I will give kudos to your radio station because you have a host of really talented young women that are going to be sort of that next wave, and they are really talented. And that's the same thing, like whether it's Husky softball, whether it's radio, it's like, you know, you do something and then you see like the people behind you and you're like, oh my gosh, they're so much better than me. I mean, and which is great. That's what you want. So.
Well, let's talk about this team. We put it off long enough. We can't avoid it anymore. Angie, let's talk about this Mariner team. let's say we made you manager for a day or a week or whatever. What do you do as a manager to hold a team together that is, they're floundering? I mean, there's no other way to say it. They're going out there and they're just getting drilled and you're trying to keep everybody's head in the game. You're trying to, you know, make sure you've got some harmony in that clubhouse. I mean, for me, I look at Scott Servais and say, boy, he's got a tall order in front of him, because that kind of losing, the way that they're losing, I feel like can be pretty destructive, potentially toxic, if he's not out in front of it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, first of all, I have a fifth of something strong in my bottom drawer. but I think that a lot of what, you know, sort of is going on right now just stems from, you know, the defense. And that's enough to make, you know, somebody pull your hair out. And when you think about like anything, whether, you know, I don't think this team should start doing trust falls, you know, to sort of, you know, come together as a group. But what you do need to be able to do is trust each other. And I think defensively, that's really hard right now. And I feel like that's for the pitchers, where, you know, they want to be able to throw a pitch and they want to have conviction, you know, that the guys behind them are going to go and catch that pitch. And it's not like people are pointing fingers or playing the blame game, but it's really hard to play this game. And especially for this pitching staff, that's not just like a strike 'em out staff, to right now probably be able to trust the defense. I mean, this team has let up 58 unearned runs. The next closest team, Detroit, at 33. Ugh. And, you know, at the front of that is Marco Gonzalez. Marco Gonzalez is number one in all of baseball with 12 unearned runs.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what do you By the way, what do you think is wrong with Marco? We know that he's super competitive. I just wonder sometimes, is he too hard on himself? Do you get that sense from him?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, Tom. Like, I mean, he is such a competitor, but I don't think he's so much too hard on himself. But I think it kind of goes back to that, you know, not only trust the guy next to you, but sort of trust your stuff. I was asking Scott Service about that yesterday going into the start. It's like, you know, I've heard you say, hey, he doesn't have the crispness at the end of his pitches. He doesn't have the finish. And it's like, what, you know, how do you fix that? That seems like a hard thing to fix. And he was like, he really just has to, sometimes you're not about, you know, oh, I want to nibble here or get a location. It's like, even if it ends up off the plate, throw it so, you know, you've got that life at the end of it. And it's okay if it ends up, you know, off the edge of the plate because they're going to chase it. So I think for Marco, his stuff is good. He's just got to throw it, you know, with conviction. And I think he's kind of gotten away from that and trying to feel things a little bit, and he's just catching too much of the plate.
We're expecting some things to change with the Mariners. It started yesterday, Angie, with Jay Bruce being traded. What was your experience with him?
Oh, such a good guy, Ross. Such a good guy. And I'm not like I want to, like, you know, move this guy or move that guy, but you're sort of hoping that that was going to be the last one to leave versus really the first one. At the same time, I have this, like, fantasy is a little bit of a strong word. I have this hope, this dream that that it provides an opportunity for someone else to sort of step up into that role. And I'm like, you know, they say don't name names, but I'm going to name names. I kind of hope that now that Kyle Seager is back, that he can, like, assume more of a leadership role, because I don't think he's ever been able to. You know, he's always had Robbie or Nelson or somebody, you know, here versus when he was kind of coming up. And it's like, all right, hey, Kyle, no one else is here. It's kind of you and a whole bunch of young dudes, you know. And it's impossible to be a leader. I mean, you've talked to any player, Jay Buhner back in the day. You know, if you're struggling with injuries and you're not part of that team, it's really hard to, like, hey, I need you to, you know, suck it up. I need you to, you know, hey, get back in here. I know you're hurt, but, you know, we're all playing hurt. Let's go. But now that he's back, I'm kind of hoping to see a little bit more of that.
What does he look like to you? Just, I mean, we all talked about his physique has changed. He looks leaner. Mm-hmm. He's got a different approach at the plate. His stance is different, and he's been productive early, which is a pleasant surprise because you figured, all right, no spring training. He might have some ramp up time before he gets hot. And he seems to have started out hot. How does he look to you just out in the field and at the plate?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before, you know, he was so strong, and there, whenever you're strong, there's a lot of bulk there. A lot of times you're not nearly as flexible. And I think that for Kyle, that lack of flexibility, in his swing, and particularly his lower half, was stuffing him up. And I think it made things, it's a lot harder to be flexible and be able to hit the ball to all fields. I mean, I think he told me that this one time he was only at like one or two home runs at Safeco Field, like left of center. But he comes out swinging and doubling down the line and looking the other way and hitting the ball, you know, hard the other way. He's still getting his hits down the right field line as well. But it's also kind of one of those things in baseball as well. Like, even Joey Gallo's hitting the ball the other way. And I love how baseball does this. It's like, oh, we're going to shift everybody. And then all of a sudden now it's like, you know, everybody's batting average went down by, you know, 47 points, and we're like, hey, wait a minute, I guess I do have to hit it over there as well. And I think it's cool overall that you're seeing baseball sort of shift the other way. I think Kyle's one of those guys that's bought into the fact that there's a whole lot of hits on the left side of the field, but he looks fantastic, and he just looks so flexible. He just doesn't look tight. And the other thing I think, guys, that really sort of helped him is he's a really quick healer, and unfortunately, just because of the injury, they had to put him on the 60-day DL. I think he was ready to go a long time ago, and he was just sort of stuck there, just, you know, literally chewing on his nails, waiting to be activated. And so he was really able to hit the ground running. And you know, if you look, if you know what you're looking at, and you see, like, oh, he had like two errors, you know, they gave them to Kyle, but I'd say it happened on the other end, and good footwork would have prevented those. And he's such a difference maker over at third base. He's fun to watch defensively.
You're in that clubhouse. When you look at the younger players, because you mentioned Bruce is gone. I mean, we didn't expect him to be around here too long, but who is the next leader or leaders on this team?
Yeah. Oh, Tom, that's a good question. I think that you've got some different personalities. I mean, obviously, I'm going to say this carefully. Like, Mitch Haniger reminds me of an Edgar Martinez in the sense that I'm not going to get up, on the footstool and yell at everybody, but it's sort of like, hey, look how I go about my business and, do as I say, because I'm not going to say much. Mm. I think that, right, wrong, or otherwise, a lot of times, you have to have success as a player. You'd like to say like, oh, you could, just be, a guy that everybody would follow. But unfortunately, I just don't think too often in this game that guys follow people that aren't successful. So, I mean, you're going to have to continue to, watch who emerges and see, you get some different personalities in there. But I think it's just you're also kind of speaking to what's going on right now and why it feels so sort of squishy. It's because there's nobody sort of really rising up. Jay Bruce kind of was that guy, and it wasn't like he was like even leading. It's just everybody went to him. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Mitch Haniger's got his own issues to deal with right now, doesn't he? He's a little bit of a dip.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, you look at Mitch's swing, and people are making adjustments to him. I mean, one thing I like about his swing, his bat, is just in the zone forever. You see where it goes in the back of his swing, and then he has that ability to, even if you throw him off speed or even if you throw him a breaking ball, where he'll make that front knee soft and keep going sort of, back to front and keep that bat in the zone. He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Angie, we touched on defense, and you talk about trust and things like that. Individually, looking at some of these guys, and Santana's an interesting guy because you love who he can be at the plate. We've seen his power. We've seen him drive in runs. But for an outfielder, a left fielder, is he a guy you look at that you say, well, with enough work, he could be a serviceable left fielder? Or do you look at him and just say, you know what, he doesn't have the instincts, and it's just not natural, and ultimately – he should be a DH. How do you view Santana?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's an easy game when you sit here and sort of preach. But the thing about Domingo is, you're right. He's got speed. You see at times angles that he takes, and you're just like, wow, this guy really could be a plus outfielder. And then other times you're like, what was he thinking on that one? And I think part of, and it sounds like I'm talking to a little leaguer, but I really do believe this, is like, you've got to have the mindset, particularly in the outfield, like, where you're walking into it and every single pitch is coming your way every single time. And you can't really take pitches off, because if you hesitate, I mean, it just kind of, eats you up. And if it's by your shortstop, like, who really cares? But when stuff's dropping in the outfield, like you saw with Malik Smith yesterday, it's just major damage, to quote my kids. They say that all the time. Something about flex tape. Anyway. Major damage out there when balls land in the outfield. And with Malik's, it's like something different. I think like he's like a little bit hesitant. You're seeing like right fielder come over and take balls away from the center fielder. And you're even seeing Domingo kind of, catch that one and left. And you watch a plus outfielder like Mike Trout, he's taking everything. Like, he's moving his right fielder off like, go play the line, Hey, yeah, you over there play line. I got everything in here. And, Malik needs to get back to that.
What do you think about the use of the opener in baseball? We're going to see one tonight with Wade LeBlanc. How do you think that's been working for the Mariners and just across baseball?
I think, obviously, if it wasn't working, then you wouldn't see all these teams continue to implement it. You look at a certain matchup and you're like, oh, if I can, get through – you know, this heart of the order, you know, with that benefits me in the matchups for me. And then I've got my guy that can, you know, get through the second, third, and maybe even the fourth time through the lineup. I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think that, you know, one thing, people are constantly like, oh, you know, why are you trying to reinvent this or why are you doing this? Like, well, you better. Because the game isn't, you know, the same now as it was 10 years ago, as it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And I mean, sure, there's some things that stay the same, but, you know, as much as I hate it too, you know, you've got to adapt and you've got to move on.
The bullpen has been a big issue, and certainly a Hunter Strickland return is going to be helpful, don't you think?
Yes. It helps everything sort of fall into place. And you know, use that word just overall in the clubhouse of squishy. Well, like the bullpen's just like swampy.
Yeah.
you know, you just, there's just like, I mean, and listen, they're not throwing darts at the scorecard. You know, they're looking at matchups. But at the same time, you know, when you have that guy for the ninth, it just allows you to just do so many more things and you know, line things up just a little bit more. So yeah, I think it's you know, it's going to be one of those things that you're not going to even, you know, realize until you get, you know, 10, 15 games with him back and go, wow, that really kind of, you know, cleared things up, didn't it?
Angie, we've heard the idea of a six-man rotation being in play potentially, just the idea thrown out there when Felix is healthy that they could go that route. To me, this season, I look at for anything and just say, well, why not? There's really not much on the line, you know, so why not? But what would you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I really like this, and maybe I'm looking at it from like even a youth standpoint, where I just feel like there's only so many bullets in that gun, you know, as a pitcher, and that we are, these guys are generating so much speed, so much torque on their arms, so much everything. And if you listen again, I know the old guys, they're like, no, I want to pitch every fifth day. And like, you're going to get that. But again, the game evolves. And it's like, if you can convince these guys, listen, you know, this is better for you in the longevity of your career, because when we run you out there every fifth day, this is what it does to you long term versus this. And so, you know, the more data you can show those guys, you've seen that sort of with the catching game and like, hey, listen, if you drop this knee down here, you know, and it's going to put you in a better position to, you know, field this ball or frame this ball. And then it's going to add years to your catching career versus always being in this position. So, you know, I think that once the player sort of can wrap their head around, hey, you know, this isn't like taking money out of, you know, my bank account, it's going to be adding to it, then I think it's better. But again, I think I look at it from a youth standpoint and I see all these like young kids that are just getting overthrown over everything. And again, I just go back to, there's only so many bullets in a gun, you know, and whether you're 29 or, you know, you're 16, you know, and it's empty. It's empty.
Hey, let me ask you about, you talked about changes in the game and, you know, adjusting and things like that. And we've talked about some of the ideas that have been floated out there, whether it's, you know, starting extra innings with a runner on second, or, you know, lowering the mound or moving the distance of the mound, or Tom's proposed just lopping off two innings of a game and making it a seven inning game.
Do it.
Don't do it.
Do it.
Don't do it. But where are you, a purist? Are you somebody that says, you know what, you can't mess with the fundamental, the parts of the game, or are you open to any change? What do you think about some of the proposals that have been out there?
Yeah, I don't like the idea of everybody's going to have their own thing. I don't mind kind of the clocks, like, hey, let's speed this up. I actually really do not like the idea that like a pitcher has to come in and face X amount of batters. I'm completely against that, because there are guys, I mean, that's what they do, is they get lefties out. And then you want to, you know, get this guy in who gets righties out. I mean, that's just, to me, that's part of the chess match. That's part of the game. That's what you should do, or should have in your arsenal. But this, you know, obviously it makes them, you know, their splits and puts a lot more emphasis on it. But as far as changing the base pass, no. The mound, no. Although I kind of was having a conversation the other day with somebody on the softball end of it about maybe like leaving the circle where it is, but like you know, there's only 60-foot base pass in softball, like what it would do if they moved that back to like 65 or something like that, which would change the game, and I wouldn't hate that. So I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. Is what I'm saying, don't move them in baseball. Softball, hey, why not?
Hey, speaking of which, I have to tell you, and Graz and I were talking about this, we both spent a lot of time watching women's softball over the weekend and really loved it. I mean, I don't mean that to be patronizing or anything.
Hated the way the Huskies lost, but...
Yeah, but that was a heck of a game, man.
Tremendous game.
To watch that girl throw 179 pitches or whatever she ended up throwing, and then she hits the home run to win it, and I know the Huskies were on the wrong end of it, but what a game. I mean, just give me a thought on what the Huskies did this year.
You started off this interview making me uncomfortable, and now you're going to make me cry at the end of it.
Sorry.
You know, it's proof, and I'm not just saying this because I am a former Husky and a teammate of Heather Tarr, the coach, but the best team did not win this year. They really were, I felt, the best, the strongest team, and they just, unfortunately, you know, the Pac-12 continues to just beat up on each other. They had UCLA and went to extra innings in the first game and, you know, came back through the loser's bracket, beat everybody. And then, you know, you've got UCLA. And, I mean, those three teams are just so good. And any given day, you know, each one of them is going to win, even though the Huskies, again, I feel like they had two pitchers. They didn't just have one. They were built for it, and they just didn't get the timely hit when they needed to. But the good news is they got literally one of the best, if not the best, young coaches in softball. So you're going to see them there every year, and you do.
Hey, last one before we let you go. Just we talk about the progression in sports and the athlete, whether we're talking NFL or Major League Baseball or basketball. How much different are the girls these days versus when you played? I mean, we always talk about bigger, stronger, faster these days. Do they look like that to you, or do you feel like, you know what, this was similar to when I was playing?
First of all, in this decade, we call them women. They are so much bigger, faster, stronger. I mean, I joke. I was like, from what I was able to do back then, it's like, could I make this team? Like, I hope so. They're just incredible. And like, you watch, you know, if you just go on UW and their Twitter feed, and you just see the highlights, and you see their first baseman coming out of nowhere, like Superwoman, diving for a bunt, and, you know, plays down the left and right field line up against the wall. I mean, it just, the athleticism is just incredible. And that's the same thing, by the way, you know, at the major league level. I mean, you look at like Alan Trammell and stuff like that. Go back and look at that video and compare those guys to, you know, the athletes of today. And it's just incredible. And so I always, you know, I don't talk much about, you know, how I used to play, because everybody's just so much better than anybody was, you know, 20 years ago. They're just incredible. The competition, you know, there's so many people that want those scholarships, and there's so many people competing for it, whether it's, you know, on the boys' side or the men's side in college, or the girls' side or the women's side in college. You know, there's so much competition. It's fun to watch.
So your career batting average of .429 these days might have been around .370.
No, it would have been .429. I'm just saying. You know.
At .429, you're making the team.
You'd have been just fine.
Yeah,
Angie.
I probably wouldn't have stole 59 bags. I probably would have only gotten, you know, 51 or 52.
And a single season batting average of .472, by the way. Just in case anybody's curious about the first woman to be inducted into the Husky Hall of Fame. But that's okay. You know, accolades. We opened by embarrassing you. We're going to close by embarrassing you with all of your accolades. So
you guys are so sweet. But no, I mean it. Like, I'm just very proud to have, like, just been that little opening rung for the Husky softball team, and all those women are literally, they are so much better than I ever was. They're really, really impressive, and I love watching it. I love it.
Angie, you're the best. Thanks so much for taking time with us today. We love watching you on Root Sports, as everybody else does, and we hopefully will be talking again very soon.
Thanks, Angie.
You guys, it's so fun. Thank you so much. You know, I love hanging out with you guys.
There you go. Angie Mentink of Root Sports, and one of the all-time greats when it comes to Husky softball. First to be inducted into the Husky Hall of Fame. Hit .472.
Not bad. I
mean, man, a career batting average of .429.
That's Ty Cobb. That's better than Ty Cobb.
Much better.
Did anybody in the dead ball era have a 400 career average?
No. The all-time record is Ty Cobb.
With 367. Wow.
By the way, she played against the men when she played with the Silver Bullets, professional baseball.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
How about that?
Angie Arlotti.
She could play. That was a heck of an athlete, heck of a baseball player, and a great broadcaster now. So our thanks to Angie for joining us. We're going to come back. Roger Goodell had some interesting thoughts on proposals out there that have floated around about preseason games, their importance, things like that. We're going to get into that next year with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Bravo Golf Tango. Bravo Golf Tango. The line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It is the eavesdrop here with Bob Gross and Tom. Normally, we take a listen to something somebody said somewhere about stuff.
And they were just going to read quotes.
So we'll listen to us talk about Roger Goodell talking about preseason. It's always a conversation, right? Four preseason games. I know season ticket holders have a very passionate take on this because they're paying for it. As fans that don't pay for it and just sit home and watch it on TV, you go, eh.
Or don't watch it.
Yeah,
right.
It's just,
thank you, Tom.
It's looked at more of an evaluation period for the coaches to whittle down their roster, see who's going to fill out the depth on that roster, who's the 53rd man, all that. You know,
the ultimate ripoff for the fan, though.
But even to the coaches here now, some of them are saying it's not really worth having four games.
I'm going to tell you one coach who probably didn't partake in that particular line of thinking.
Peter Carroll.
Yeah, that would be one. Yeah.
Okay.
But
what does Raji say? If Clayton would say.
Rodgers. He's reiterating his stance of wanting to reduce the four-game preseason schedule at a time the league and Players Association have begun preliminary talks on a new CBA. He cites discussions he's had with coaches and saying he doesn't believe four preseason games are necessary to evaluate and develop players for the regular season. He says the NFL should do everything to the highest quality, and quote, I'm not sure preseason games meet that level right now.
Okay, no.
I agree with him there. Now, for anybody getting excited about the idea of eliminating preseason games, I'm with you on that. They're not going to take away, let's say they lop off two of them. You're going to have two games. They're not going to take away two different opportunities to generate revenue. So those are then going to be, in turn, I would assume, a proposal to make it an 18-game season or a 17-game season if they take away one preseason game.
I would assume that you're right.
Could they?
I don't think they're just eliminating a revenue stream.
No, I don't think so.
He works for the owners. And the owners aren't going to go, yeah, it's all right. We're charging the season ticket holders for them. But let's do away with that part of our revenue.
Well, it's eliminating one game.
Say again?
Well, you're talking about tickets. You're talking about eliminating one home game per team.
Right. But don't you still see the owners going, well, wait, so you want to just take away? And I don't know what they make on it.
Those tickets are paid for, though, right?
Yeah,
even
it's part
of their package. Even if you don't go.
Remember, their ticket revenue is infinitesimal in terms of what league revenue is.
Yeah, but you always say, Graz, who are we talking about?
I understand.
They don't want to lose a nickel.
They don't, but it's a very small amount of money. To me, this is one the NFL could give on.
What if a compromise was to add a playoff team on both sides so that you get an extra game? Would that make sense? So I know it's not across the league. You wouldn't be getting an extra game out of every team, but what if they thought, you know what, we add a game that'll increase revenue that way, or you're adding two games, I guess.
It's a possibility.
But you're not adding it for every team.
No, you're not.
So every team is going to lose the revenue, whatever it is. I don't know what they're generating
from
that one game.
Because if you had an extra playoff game, there would be revenue, or two extra playoff games, one on each side. So I guess you would only have one bye on each side, and then the rest of the teams would play.
But how does that help the Bills?
Well,
it's almost
don't they share that?
They share everything in the NFL.
Yeah.
The revenue stream from the playoff games?
From TV money and all that?
That's all part of
the
TV
money, but I'm talking ticket revenue and merchandise, all that. That's one of the teams that are involved.
But like Graz said, ticket revenue is not as big a priority as these other things. So if you had more playoff games and you were able to divvy up that money, maybe that would offset
it. You're not going to see the networks come back and say, well, if you're taking a game away, we're not going to – taking two exhibition games away, we're not going to do our deal anymore. No one's walking away from the NFL.
Right. And by the way, networks typically aren't broadcasting those preseason games anyway. Those are all local.
A lot of them,
most
right.
of them. I mean, some of them,
there's a network.
NFL Network or Carrium or whatever, some national. But those are mostly local. Q13 carries it here.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to do away with anything without putting something else in its place, whether it's a playoff game, whether it's adding one more regular season game to the schedule, or we don't even know what he would like to do. Does he want to cut it in half? Does he want two games?
Yeah, he didn't say anything on that, did he?
No, it's very general and just saying, I'm not sure that the preseason games meet that level right now, where he says the NFL should do everything in the highest quality. Okay, so would it be a two-game preseason, a three-game preseason?
I think you need at least two. If I'm a coach, I think you need at least
two. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be one. I mean, it's two would be the minimum. I could see it being three. Like, all right, we're going to do away with that fourth game, which is
we've had this discussion beforehand. I mean, I think they could ultimately, if they wanted to, do away with all of them.
Do you guys want 18 games regular season, just theoretically?
It's hard to argue against more NFL.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to play now, the regulars aren't playing these games. So that would be games you're adding onto their body.
Yes, it would. And let's say you add a bye week. So now it's going to be 19 weeks.
I don't think the league would have a problem with dominating a couple more weeks, extending their season.
It goes into mid-February or late February even.
Yeah, I don't think they'd have an issue with that at all.
The appetite for NFL has proved to be insatiable.
Or you could start the season a week or two earlier in September than they've been doing it too.
I think, listen, the players would negotiate for more money, a bigger slice of the pie. Hey, this is going to shorten our career.
But with all those extra games and all that extra revenue across the league for everybody, I mean, maybe the owners would be willing to discuss that.
They'd have to discuss it.
Right.
They're not going to say, well, no, you're getting the same cut, but we are going to ask you to play another game or two more, whatever the plan is for the preseason. That won't fly.
Wouldn't put it past the owners to try and propose exactly that, though.
Well, no, certainly they would try. They'd be foolish not to try. Hey, maybe they'll bite. You know, they say no.
Well, I mean, they already know that there's the union. There's no way they're going to stand up to them. They literally can do what they want, in my opinion.
I'll tell you who would enjoy an 18-game season.
Wait, hang on one sec. You think they could just unilaterally go, well, you guys are playing 18 games
now? Not unilaterally, but negotiate it with, and if they wanted to strike, they'd strike in the off season. They wouldn't cost themselves any game checks. I don't think they believe that the union is any viable force against them.
Yeah, but the idea that we're going to increase your workload without any more compensation, that's just not
going to happen. Getting game checks, though. They're getting game checks for those extra two games.
Yeah, but I think they're going to have to sweeten the pot because you're going to get the argument you're shortening careers.
I agree. They'll have to make some concession. I don't think the owners could just go through and – I mean, they haven't been able to do it to this point, so they'd have to make some kind of concession, sure.
Be curious to see if Goodell follows up with the 18-game proposal.
Or 17.
Right, because he hasn't done that. We should make that clear. He hasn't said any reason for like what this would result in. He just is saying, as far as quality is concerned, preseason games, the last two in particular, are not living up to the NFL standard.
Well, no, actually, the third one is the one that everybody watches because that's where the starters play the longest.
Fourth one is the worst.
Fourth one.
Sure, but if you're shortening it by two games,
well, we're just assuming two games. Two. Okay. He didn't specify, so we're left to speculate. So,
four minus two is still two, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, but maybe they shorten it by one, is what I'm saying. Maybe they say, all right, that fourth one is just a nothing game, and we understand you're picking all your special teamers there, whatever you're doing, but you're going to have to do that in three games instead of four. And we'll add one game to the regular season as opposed to two. One would be an easier sell. So maybe that's the middle of the road where they all meet there. Like, all right, we're not going to add two. We'll add one game to the regular season. We'll lop off that fourth game of the preseason, give you more money, whatever, and that's everybody wins.
You had another bye for 17?
Could.
Potentially, I would think so, yeah.
Why not? Why not, honestly? I mean, that seems like it would be advantageous to both sides. You extend the season and you give more rest.
Yeah, I think eliminating a game or two, whatever it ends up being from the preseason, I don't think anybody's going to scream about that outside of Pete Carroll and maybe a couple of other coaches, but I think fans would absolutely appreciate it, would they not?
I agree.
I sure would. Yeah.
All right, we will come back. We will sum it all up next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gross and Tom.
Brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB, Brown Sugar Bourbon.
The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
This question was just asked by me in the break. Are the Mariners actually in the wild card race right now?
No. You said it with a sincere tone.
Well, think about it.
It came up because of the Angels.
Right. A month and a half ago, the Mariners were in first place looking like they were going to run away with it. And then they faded. But you never really know with the wild card race how far back you have to be to actually be out of it in early June.
Well, there are a dozen games under 500 now, the Mariners, right?
Right. But they're
You're right. Yeah. They're 7.5 back.
Were you
going to
say no 12?
No, I was thinking, for some reason, I was thinking 10 when you said that. I was thinking, no, they're 12. They're not 10.
Well, you've got a whole.
But you're right. A dozen.
Yeah. You got a whole bunch of teams that are in it, though, that are, let's see, you got Tampa, Texas, Red Sox, Oakland, White Sox, Angels, Indians, all within two games. So that's a heck of a race. And then you have the Mariners and Tigers, 7.5, and then the Blue Jays, Royals, Orioles, all 10, 12, and 13 off. So technically, are they out of it? No.
Not mathematically, but yeah, they're out of it.
They are racing, as you said, also in the break, towards the bottom here.
Yeah, they'll be in competition for worst record in baseball. They'll be amongst the worst. I mean, the Orioles are about as putrid as it gets, and they're 13 back. You know what I mean? It feels like they should be further back, is my point.
Right.
They've got 18 wins. They're 18-41.
And they didn't have a 13-2 start. If the Mariners started at this clip, they'd actually be worse than the Orioles.
Right.
It's bad. It's bad.
We were talking, too, in the sports bit this morning about the perception of this season based on how it was told to us, how it was going to go, right? Mm-hmm. And they've had worse – well, we'll see what the record is at the end of the year, but
– they just had the worst May in their history.
Right. At the end of this season, their win-loss record may not be the worst that they've ever had in franchise history, but that's not – and even if they don't come in dead last in baseball, say they're, I don't know, the sixth worst team – it's still a disaster. There's just no way of sugarcoating that. What you're seeing on the field, if you watch the games.
Right now, you're right, Tom. I mean, the way they're playing, they're getting nothing out of it.
Right. And believe me, we had this discussion, I think, last Monday about Scott Service and his job security. I'm not saying he's going to be fired this year or at all. But if they keep losing like this, don't underestimate what losing can do to a clubhouse.
Yeah.
Next year when they come back, they better show something.
Well, that'll be the wild card. That'll be when I'll start to agree with you. Based on what they were anticipating this season, they signed a new extension. They all acknowledged, Jerry DePoto, everybody acknowledged, it's not this year. It's about the future. So I tend to say, all right, this year they have a pass. They're not, you know, because they understood what they were in store for. But if that clubhouse falls apart, if that thing starts to become a toxic environment, then potentially he could be in. The seat could be getting hot.
He's got to show he can manage through that.
Well, you got to be a little worried about what you're seeing on the field. I mean, it's one thing to be losing, like we said. You know, if you're losing because you can't hit or you don't have the pitching, that's understandable. But, you know, really the way they're playing is unacceptable.
Yeah, when you're just booting balls around, when you're just not even
I mean, what are they doing with all this extra infield? Is this a good idea?
You mean before the game?
Yeah, we've heard him talk about that glowingly early on. You don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah, well, we've seen videos of Malik's out there hours before the game shagging fly balls and everything. And
I mean, do they need to go bowling?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? I mean,
like just a team building exercise,
a bonding, just trust falls. Like Angie said, maybe they need trust falls. They need to start doing that.
It worked for our show.
Yeah, I'm just glad you caught me.
Yeah,
it's a bad situation right now. It really is, and I think. It can be absolutely demoralizing, not to lose, but to just go out there and just get freight trained the way they have.
That's precisely what happened yesterday.
When you're looking at guys who are going to be part of your future, guys like Marco, who are struggling as bad as he has, and I still believe in him. I'm not writing him off or anything, but who started off 5-0.
Yep.
Okay, one of the best lefties in the AL, hopefully. And is he tipping his pitches? I mean, you said before you think that's an easy fix. I hope so. If that's what it is, I mean, that better get fixed.
Well, and again, I'll ask the question, if that's the case, why did it take so long to figure it out? 7 starts. If that's the case. We're speculating, but that was some of what people were talking about, thinking, hey, he might be tipping his pitches. Okay.
I think if you find out that he's hurt, that'd be almost good news.
Well, unless it turned into something that was going to nag him, but I hear what you're saying.
I mean, it would explain it.
It would make sense, at least.
Yeah.
You go, okay. You can understand, it makes sense, and you can heal. Versus, okay, why is he just not good? Nobody has an answer. That's a very uncomfortable spot to be in with a guy who was your number one starter.
Right.
You know, and he's out there just getting drilled like just about everybody else in that rotation, by the way. Nobody's nobody's picking up the slack. Nobody's going out there and, well, he's doing his part.
Well, when
who can you say that about?
But when Felix comes back, it'll be fine.
He's going to blend right in. He will no longer be the worst pitcher of the rotation. He'll just be one of the bunch.
You want to make a bet on whether or not the Mariners can beat this guy Corbin Martin tonight?
No.
He hasn't gotten out of the sixth inning. He mostly gets out. He mostly ends up getting yanked in like the fourth. But they win. They're 3-1 in his starts.
Have the Mariners given you any reason to bet on him in a positive way?
Astros are already 20 over 500, by the way. 40 and 20.
What are you saying? They're good?
I'm saying they're good.
Is tonight an ESPN game?
I believe so.
I think so.
I'm pretty certain I saw that ad.
Thanks, Astros.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Monday Night Baseball is featuring the Seattle Mariners.
There's a hockey game tonight.
There is, yeah. Right?
Okay, good. Yeah, game four. Which will probably spend the... St. Louis lost 7-2 the last game.
Is it 2-1 Boston?
2-1 yes. Boston.
Yes.
Gloria.
Another Boston win.
All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Dwayne Casey and Angie Menting, for joining us on the show. If you missed those two, you missed a lot. So check that out at the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, then click on our picture. It's all right there waiting for you each and every day. We're back with you tomorrow right here with Bob Gross and Tom.
A role play group? What would a role? What would...